It's August 21st, 2018, and this week on Birdland BS, a Ravens reality check, week two of the preseason. The Orioles make MLB history, a Birdland BS fantasy football draft recap, and more. Stay tuned. Thought we'd start the show off like that? Birdland BS. Check it out. What's up, Birdland BSers? It's Fred and Scott.
What's up?
Episode 59. And we're calling this one, here we go again.
Why does this always happen?
Yeah, some breaking news surrounding the Ravens, which we are going to dive into here shortly. Man, it's been a pretty entertaining past couple of few days. First of all, I want to do a shout out to my best friend, Gene. It's his birthday today.
Happy birthday, Gene.
Turned 36 years old. Got a chance to spend Sunday with Gene and his wife, Nikki. And my wife Jamie went downtown to Blue Moon Cafe for breakfast. Which, if you've never been there, holy God! Everything on this menu sounded amazing. But the one thing I couldn't get past, they had Captain Crunch infused French toast. Amazing. I mean, I'm a cereal kid. I still, to this day, I eat cereal almost every day.
You ever had a Fruity Pebbles donut?
I have. Matter of fact, funny you bring that up. Right across the street from Blue Moon Cafe is Diablo Donuts. And my wife and I had been there. Gene and Nikki had never been there. So we were like, you know what? We got a 40-minute wait for breakfast. Let's pregame it over Diablo Donuts. And we ended up splitting a maple bacon donut, which is amazing. And then we had the Fruity Pebble donut.
You're making me feel like Homer Simpson. Donuts. Yeah.
They were amazing. So if you are ever down in the Fed Hill area and you're looking for breakfast, Blue Moon Cafe, check it out for sure.
You worked off those carbs, I understand, too.
Yes, we did, in a very fun and different kind of way. So the entire day was kind of set up by Nikki, where Gene had no idea where we were going the entire day. I just kind of navigated him where we were going.
Right.
So we had no idea we were going to Blue Moon. And then after that, we went over to Urban Axes downtown. Urban Axes. And I didn't stutter. That's what it's called, Urban Axes. And pretty cool. So basically what you do is you go down there and you rent like an hour's worth of time where you rent a booth, an axe throwing booth, and they have a coach that comes down and shows you the proper way to throw the axes, how the scoring's done, how the gaming's done. And they actually just opened a bar inside of this place. So you're throwing axes and drinking beer, responsibly, I hope so. Yeah. Man, who would have thought throwing axes would be so much fun? But it was, man. It is honestly very affordable. I mean, I think it costs like $22 or $23 per person for the hour.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all. Like I said, they get you out there for the first time, just throwing a couple and teaching the techniques and that kind of thing. You can either do it two-handed over the head, or for me, what worked better because my shoulders are so broad, throwing it one-handed.
Right.
I was completely awkward trying to throw it with two hands. It just did not work for me. But Gene was an absolute monster. This guy, I mean,
I saw the pictures in the videos. He was just hitting the center,
dude. One after the other, he could not miss the bullseye, even if he asked him to. They actually have this above what we call like the dartboard rings,
right?
They had these two little green dots up there in the very corners of the board, and it's called clutch. And what you have to do is you have to yell out the word clutch. Your instructor has to hear you yell it, and then she has to yell it out as well to confirm. And basically, it's an all or nothing shot. You're going for it. You, no matter where you land on the board, you don't get any other points unless you hit that shot, and you get 7 points for hitting it. Sure enough, first time he called clutch, boom. I mean, it's unreal. So we had a lot of fun. It was a really good time. So they're brand new to the area. I think they opened in April, maybe. They just opened the bar inside, so now they're going to start doing a little bit more advertising and stuff.
Yeah.
Man,
was DB says I look terrified. DB, I am terrified because I just imagine him throwing an axe at me.
Yeah, you know, be surprised, man. I got down there, and, you know, you think just wing it, throw it as hard as you possibly can. No.
It's all about the rotation.
It's all about the proper rotation. The girls were throwing it way harder than we were. That was it. Just getting the flick of the wrist down, getting the rotation down, getting your distance down, where to stand, that kind of thing. And they help you with that. So it's a lot of fun.
My parents back up the woods, and my dad always had a little hatchet. I would go out there and throw it against the trees.
It was funny. We talked about that when we were getting ready to leave. I was like, I'm going to set up a booth in my backyard. I'm going to be doing this at my backyard. I'm like, man, my neighbors are going to think I'm an absolute lunatic. But I'm okay with that. It was a lot of fun, though. So how about you? Anything fun going on over the weekend or?
Not much. Just hanging out. Just some family stuff going on and chilling out. My wife and I got a night out without the little one last night. His daycare is off this week, so
nice.
My parents, you know, helped out yesterday or actually Sunday and then today. And so we went out to the tower in Bel Air and had great time there watching the game. Had some nice drinks.
There you go.
For Mondays, they do a great deal. It's $4 you call it. So
I like that.
I got a Grey Goose Orange Crush for $4.
Oh, you can't beat that.
No way. Wow. You can't beat it.
Nice.
They have all kinds of like raffles and stuff during the game. They actually just redid, I know you and I talked about it before. They redid their deck up top.
Right.
And it's now all enclosed. Completely not what I expected to look like. Looks great. They actually have, I didn't know it, they put pool tables in.
Wow.
And they had a pool league going.
Nice.
So it was pretty interesting to see. But we had you know, quite a bit of fun. So
that's good.
I think we need to delve into this breaking news.
Yeah, yeah. So as much as I wanted to kind of get into some positivity surrounding the Ravens, because there's a lot of good things going on with the team, it was almost like we were kind of waiting for that bad domino to fall, whether it was an injury thing or just it seemed like too many things were going good. Too many things were going positive. But yeah, in breaking news, Jimmy Smith, cornerback, has been suspended 4 games by the NFL for violation of NFL personal conduct policy. Part of this, I mean, it not everything has kind of been released to the public yet as far as the details, but what I've gathered is that this wasn't so much as a physical thing. This was more of a threatening and emotionally abusive behavior between him and an ex-girlfriend of his.
Yeah.
Kind of taken back because here's the penalty. So the penalty is 4 games to start the season. So he's going to miss the Bills, the Bengals, the Broncos, and the Steelers game. What I'm kind of taken back is the Ravens say they're going to welcome him back after his suspension. And for me, that's the Ravens kind of going against what they said after the whole Ray Rice allegations and everything came, you know, to light with Ray Rice. They made a statement that they were not good. They were going to have zero tolerance for domestic violence. And I get it. This is verbal. So far, what we've heard, it's more verbal than it is physical. But my question brings up, if it was anybody else other than Jimmy Smith, if it was Averett, if it was somebody lower on the totem pole, somebody who didn't have the financial impact and somebody that didn't have the value to the team, would they have handled this differently?
You know, I don't know. I think that's definitely a valid question to me. I can't answer it for you because of the simple fact. My issue with this whole piece is now Jimmy did come out and say that he wants to apologize to his former girlfriend. It's all
yada yada yada.
Exactly. The whole statement it was a PR piece. Right. You know, it was very clear. You know, I take responsibility for my past conduct. Blah blah blah. my issue with the NFL at this point, and we've discussed this, these are just accusations from an ex-girlfriend.
Right.
This falls right into that realm of, is it real?
Yeah, but you and I had also talked about in previous podcasts that regardless if they're accusations or not, that the NFL, and I thought we were both in agreement here, that the NFL should handle it in a way that almost like you're guilty until proven innocent type thing, where I thought we had talked that...
I had only said once charges had been brought.
Okay. All right. Well, that's different.
Because my issue is once charges have been brought, then there's sufficient evidence.
Right.
If there's no sufficient evidence, it rules out these situations where somebody's just doing it for some money.
Right. Well, I mean, he did come out in his statement and apologize. He didn't come out in his statement and deny. He came out and he apologized to his ex-girlfriend. That was like one of the first things he said in his statement. So to me, if you're coming out and apologizing...
Admission of guilt.
It's admission of guilt, right? You're not claiming that these are false accusations like some players have in the past. You're accepting what's happened. You're accepting the responsibility and the punishment from it. It's just my thing with the Ravens is... If you're going to make a statement like they did after the Ray Rice situation, that there's a zero tolerance with this kind of stuff, you know, what if there would have been a video with this and, you know, verbal, again, we don't know the details.
Right.
And again, you could be very aggressive and threatening, especially somebody of his stature to a woman. You know, I mean, he's a bigger guy, a big guy. And if he's threatening with his fist and he's threatening with a weapon in his hand, I mean, there's so many things that could have happened had maybe that been caught on video and the video been released like it was in the Ray Rice situation.
Right, right.
Would this have been handled differently? Even though there wasn't any physical contact, but you see a Jimmy Smith wielding a bat in his hand and waving it at his girlfriend like he's going to do something. But because you see the video evidence, is it handled different?
I definitely think you have to handle it differently. But until that happens, it's just hearsay. I understand he didn't come out. It also hasn't come out and said what all this bad stuff is.
Right.
We have yet to hear those reports. All we've heard is that it's personal misconduct and that it was threatening and verbal abuse.
Right.
For all I know, he could have called her a stupid bee.
Right. And it's true.
And I'm not dismissing that. Please do not say that I'm saying that that's okay. My wife will tell you that that is the last thing that I would say. Mm. But my issue in then comes the man is married or is getting married. The man has a fiance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long he's been with her. I haven't read that part of things yet. But I'm imagining there's probably a few years history there. So it's a few years. Guy's coming back off injuries, set to have a good year. Now, all of a sudden, this stuff comes out. This is that whole piece of what is the motive? What's the motive for the timing? And that's where it comes into the NFL. I don't know when they learned about this. I don't know when the accusations actually came to their attention. That's the stuff that we need to know before, in my opinion, before I can make a full decision.
And I understand that. I'm kind of the same way. I agree with you. But, all right, so let's look at Jimmy Smith for a minute, the player. How many times has he been hurt now? How many times has he been suspended now for something? And this is one of the top paid players on our football team right now. You cannot financially afford to just cut him. As a matter of fact, that would put you over the cap in penalties, $3 million, I believe the number is, if you cut ties with him.
Yeah.
So financially, it just doesn't make sense to even cut him. But what do you do with Jimmy Smith? How many chances do you give this guy? One, and how do you continue to pay a player when he just can't stay on the field?
I can answer that very easily. One more year than Breshad Perriman. I'm sorry, but the guy produces when he is on the field. I understand that.
Don't argue that at all.
But if you're going to pay the guy that's not producing and is a waste of space on this freaking team, you cannot sit here and say, I understand that there's issues right now involving this, and that's a separate issue. If that becomes, you know, you and I have talked about, if that is an issue and there comes out some real evidence or, you know, something like that, they need to handle it differently. But when it comes to his injuries and things like that, the guy, when he's on the field, has proven that what you need to do is you need to provide him the support, which I think they did with their defensive back situation now. And you've got him to have support. He doesn't need to go all out all the time. So now you limit the injuries. Now you can let him show what he is and not have to have them out there every single down. That was the problem before. Jimmy was playing almost every single down. And that's why these a guy that's playing every single down like that and doesn't get much of a break isn't going to have the longest career in the world without injury.
But, I mean, that's you're making $16 million a year. You need to be out of the field. And as a cornerback, cornerbacks are expected to be elite athletes in elite shape that can handle playing 16 games a year plus playoffs and play damn near every down.
Right.
You know, as you get older in your career, your mid-30s to your late-30s, and you're a situational type player like, you know, Darrell Revis became later in his career, that kind of thing. But at this point in the career, you know, Jimmy Smith is paid to be a top-tier cornerback in this league. And you're right. Statistically, it's crazy. If you look at the numbers statistically for this team, where our defense ranks in the NFL in interceptions and you know, completion percentage against, it's crazy how much better this defense is with Jimmy Smith on the field. But at some point, you really got to ask yourself, when's enough's enough? You're paying this guy an astronomical amount of money. It's not like baseball where you have the ability to waste money on contracts like that because there's no cap to it. You're working in the restraints of a cap, and you're working in the restraints of trying to be a Super Bowl contending team. One of your top tier players, one of your players that's making the most money on your football team, can't stay on the football field, whether that's injuries or whether that's suspensions. Either way, at some point, in my opinion, I think you got to cut bait with this guy. As detrimental as it is, as much as he means to this team when he's healthy, he doesn't do anything for you when he's not on the field.
And I absolutely agree. But given the Ravens' track record, I don't think you can put it all on Jimmy Smith. Me, it's a little bit of strength and conditioning. You know, you had some. This year's the first year, and you know, we said no knocking on the table this time. I'll knock on this table. Knock on wood. We can't blame some of these guys when there's so many going down.
Right.
When there were so many going down, I question strength and conditioning. Are these guys stretching enough? It really is.
Right.
So I think you have to, again, if Rashad Perryman makes this team, you have to go 1 year beyond that for Jimmy Smith. And if he can stay healthy, I understand he's got a suspension, but if he comes back from the suspension, stays healthy the rest of the year, you give him next year. And if he hurts himself next year, that's where you jump in. Or if he hurts himself later this year, maybe that's the
call. I said, financially, I don't think that they can make a move as far as cutting him. I was talking with Ken Zales earlier today on Twitter, and he was basically he's fed up with him. He's had it. He's done with Jimmy. He's been done with Jimmy for a long time. He's almost to the point where he's like, you know what? Screw it. If it's going to put you in the penalty, make moves, do whatever you need to do to get rid of him and to, you know, bring that cap penalty down, you know, to where that's, you know, where it's okay.
Right.
But at that point, then you're costing somebody else's job that had nothing to do with it. So there's ramifications.
Well, your only way around that's a trade.
Yeah, and somebody would have to take on that salary, and somebody would have to take on a 4-game suspension. And just nobody's going to do that at this point. So, I mean, it is kind of is what it is. It's, like I said, still early in everything, but the suspension was handed down by the league today for 4 games with Jimmy Smith. Fortunately enough, I think this is the deepest we've been at the cornerback position.
Yeah.
Getting a Tavon Young back, you know, Marlon Humphrey coming into his second year. We got picked up Brandon Carr last year, which maybe this suspension actually extends. I told you I didn't think Brandon Carr was going to be on the roster.
You might have to make him make the roster now.
Yeah, you're going to have to make him make the roster at this point, at least for those first 4 games of the season. And then when you get Jimmy back, maybe then you make a move. But anyway, so Ravens win their third preseason game of the year in week 2 of the preseason, beating the Colts 20-19. That's 11 or 12 in a row, I think, for the Ravens in preseason play that they've won. It's pretty impressive, sort of, I guess, if you care.
When you had the past 2 years the way they've been, I don't know that you can call that impressive.
Yeah, no, I guess if you care about the wins and losses in preseason, winning 11 or 12 is kind of impressive.
Because I think when they were losing during the preseason is the years that they've done well.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was really hoping to see with this game was I was hoping to see some of the bubble wide receivers that you and I have been kind of going back on, somebody really take the reins of those last couple positions at the wide receiver spot. I was thoroughly disappointed.
There were too many drops, man.
Too many drops, too many fumbles. Tim White had a fumbled return. Janarian Grant had a fumble return. Grant was actually looking good. Made some good moves, you know, put some good yardage up in the return game.
Did you see Harbaugh after that fumble?
Oh, it grabbed him out.
He was pointing. I wish they would have kept it on him because I was trying to read Harbaugh's lips.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get an opportunity like this, and I get it. You know, nerves are probably a part of it because, you know, if they're not stupid, they know that they're on the bubble of making this roster. So there's nerves that play a factor in it. But look, there's going to be nerves when you're playing the Steelers in Pittsburgh. There's going to be nerves when you're playing in the playoffs, and there's going to be nerves when, you know, you come out for your first home game at M&T Bank Stadium. You need to show that you can man up and make the plays when need be. And going beyond Tim White and Janarian Grant, our two wide receivers that we drafted this year, Jordan Lasley and Jaleel Scott, both of which had drops in this game. Lasley should have been a touchdown. On a perfect throw by RG3. Disappointing, man. I mean, I can see the potential in Lasley. He has the ability to make those big plays, but I just can't see carrying another wide receiver with drop issues.
Yeah, no. We have enough of those. You can't continue to do it. I mean, you already paid one his roster bonus.
Right.
You can't continue to do this.
It's sad. I mean, you know, like I said, I was high, very high on Tim White coming into this year. I thought that, you know, the Jordan Lasley stuff in college with the drops maybe would be different at the NFL level. Maybe he would, you know, with the right coaching staff and that kind of thing. And it just hasn't panned out. None of the wide receivers outside of the four that we know are going to make this roster.
And Brashad Perryman.
Which I it's hard for me to say that, but Brashad Perryman has actually looked good, like he always does in training camp. You know, it's a shame because this team needs wide receiver depth, and we had some guys that, you know, like I said, showed some promise last year. Tim White showed a lot of promise before the injury, and unfortunately, things aren't going his way right now.
Yeah, no, that's all the drops that we saw last night were in critical situations. And from a number standpoint, it didn't help, you know, the quarterbacks, quarterback play. But not all the drops I can put on the wide receivers.
Mm.
Not all of them. Most of them, yes, but not all of them.
The Lasley one was a perfect dropped in pass by RG3. Should have definitely caught it. Jaleel Scott, it might have been thrown behind him a little bit, but it hit him in his hands. Either way, you're an NFL wide receiver. Ball hits you in the hands. You need to come up with it.
You know, I got into
more times than not, anyway.
I got into a conversation with somebody on Twitter about that with Brashad Perryman from 2 weeks ago, where it was the ball that was RG3's first ball to Perryman. And it was in the first game, in the Hall of Fame game.
Went right through his hands,
and the person was like, oh, he was fully extended. And I shot a picture of the – you saw it. I shot a picture to the person and said, look at the video. Brashad Perryman's hands or his arms are literally at a 90-degree angle, and they're right above – literally his hands are sitting right above his head. You can't call that fully extended. He's still on the ground. He's like – it just – there are throws like that that hit guys in the hands, and I agree with you. You are an NFL wide receiver. You throw some stickum on your gloves, for God's sakes. Come on.
You don't need a – have you felt receiver gloves nowadays? They are basically gloves with built-in stickum in them.
Right, but if you can't catch it then at least throw some stickum on them and see if that helps you.
That's why you're seeing guys like, you know, Odell Beckham and, you know, some of these guys doing these crazy one-handed catches that you never used to see in the past. A lot of it has to do with the gloves. I mean, these gloves are super sticky, super tacky, but doesn't seem to help – any of our wide receivers one iota.
No.
So that was the negative. quarterbacks wise, I'm more and more justifying my reasoning for the Ravens carrying three quarterbacks.
Agreed.
Joe Flacco came out, played great. Got into check down Joe a little bit there in the beginning of the game. I think they, you know, still working through some things. You got to remember too, in the preseason, they don't really show a whole lot. So their offense is pretty basic, pretty vanilla. But to see him come out first play of the game, throw the deep ball to John Brown, which was a good throw. It was just well covered. You know, but then to see them come out, Joe Flacco, I think he was 7 of 9. Had a really, really good game. He's looked good through the preseason. Anything that you've seen with Joe?
It's typical Joe. He's not fully comfortable with needing to be mobile when he needs to be. There were a few times that he should have been mobile and wasn't. But it's typical Joe fashion. I've heard so many people already starting on Twitter and media that, oh, the only reason Joe's playing good is because of Lamar.
Right.
I hate to tell you people, it ain't because it's Lamar. Joe has always been the type of guy, and that's why Bisciotti put the pressure on him last year. That's why Ozzie put the pressure on him last year and this year. He needs to play to what he is able to play to and capable of playing to. He only seems to be able to do it when it's a contract year.
When it's a contract year, and see, I'm on the other side of that. I feel like Joe Flacco plays his best football when the pressure's on. Think about it. I mean, he plays his best football in the playoffs. Oh, yeah. He plays his best football against the Steelers. He plays his best football against the Patriots. He plays his best football when the games matter the most. It's like that lull in the middle of the season where you're playing against teams that you should beat and teams that you know, that's when
back
he plays.
Before Jacksonville was actually good, you know.
Right.
He should have been whooping up on them and he's sitting there, you know.
Or the Browns for even, you know, I mean, yeah. The Dolphins. I mean, you just go back into, like, history of Joe and you look at some of these games that he plays against these mediocre teams when the pressure isn't there, when it should be a gimme win, and that's when he plays the worst football of his career. It's like I said, it's put a little pressure on Joe and he seems to play better. And
but that pressure's not from Lamar right now.
I think it has a little bit of it has a little bit to do with it. And like you said, after next year, he's going to be in a contract situation. You know, so he's got to perform. If he wants to get paid anything like he's getting paid now or somewhere at least close to it, he's got to show that 2012 wasn't just a fluke.
Yeah, no. He has to show it. But the reason I say it's not Lamar is because of Lamar's performance last night.
Oh, well.
Someone, please, on that team, I was waiting for RG3 to grab him by the ear and go, cut it the hell out, dude. I wanted Harbaugh to rip into him. He almost ended his season last night.
Yeah.
That hit that he took.
Oh, yeah.
He's where he dropped hurt. Down into this almost. You go back and you look at the video. He dropped down almost into like a fetal position getting ready to take that hit.
Right.
And you could really get hurt by doing that, especially as a quarterback. You got to recognize you can't do that at all.
Right.
You didn't even make an attempt at sliding. The one thing I did like that I saw out of him is he was able to turn the corner a little bit more on some of the plays and beat some of the linebackers to pick up some yardage.
Yeah.
It wasn't what I think it could be, but you had talked about that on last show or the show before that was one thing that he was kind of struggling with, and I think he kind of showed that he has the ability to turn that corner when he needs to. But you've got to know you can't be taking that hit on the run. So much injury potential. Completion wise, he was 7 for 15.
Yeah.
That's why Joe doesn't have any pressure.
Well, he started 0 for 4. After that, he went 7 of 11. So if you look, take away those first four incompletes where he was, you know, maybe a little bit nervous, but whatever it may be, I don't know. But here's the thing. I'm not trying to defend Lamar in any way, but basically everything that the scouting reports said about Lamar coming out of college, 100% accurate.
Right.
I mean, the guy is electric. The guy can do things with his feet. There's no questions in that. Like, that's not debatable. I totally agree with you. If he wants to have any kind of a long NFL career, he needs to learn to slide and he needs to learn to get down earlier. These hits that he's taken are going to take a huge toll on his body. and he's not going to last for very long in the career if he continues to do that. No. He's a very good athlete. The knocks on him are his accuracy and his consistency with his mechanics. Like we talked about it, you know, they really want him to be more of a pocket passer than he's ever been in his career, which a pocket passer is being comfortable taking that three-step drop and going through your reads inside the pocket. And we haven't seen that on a consistent basis from him enough yet. It's like his first instant reaction still is to run, to get out of the pocket, to get out of harm's way.
He almost takes, when you watch his, to that point, when he takes his three-step drop, he almost takes it to an angle.
Yeah, because he's taking himself, because he, instead of going through the progressions like he should, I think he's leaning or leading towards one side of the field that he wants to get the ball down to first, right. And if that side isn't open, then boom, he's going right into run mode.
That's dangerous, though, because you get some,
you're tipping your cap.
Yeah, you get some linebackers reading that, some safeties reading that. You're going to get picked off left and right.
Right.
I do have to say that though, his throw last night on the touchdown, where it was like it was in tight coverage,
yeah,
right there, and he went through. He did become mobile, but he went through his progressions, found him, and it was a tight throw. It was in tight window.
That's
for more.
one of the things that I have been not impressed with, but happy with. Is his ability to throw on the run. He does have the ability to be accurate on the run, more accurate than most quarterbacks on the run. It's like I said, it's the mechanics when he's standing still. When his feet are planted, sometimes he can get lazy with his mechanics and throw off his back foot, and that's why you're seeing these balls sail over the wide receiver's head and, you know, way too high from where they should be and way off target. It's, you know, he's just got to work on it. I'm not like, you know, there's some people, if you pay attention to social media, that are, you know, already jumping the ship on Lamar Jackson, and, you know, it was a waste of a draft pick and all that stuff. Please just relax. This is the third preseason game of his NFL career.
We always said he was a project.
He was a project, and we said that since day one. I said since day one that Joe Flacco's job was not in jeopardy for this season. And I also said since day one that they signed RG3 that we were going to be carrying three quarterbacks because of this. Because he's going to need at least this entire season to learn and to develop. And you cannot go into this season. You can't. If you genuinely want to have a chance at being a playoff team this year, you cannot go into week one with Lamar Jackson being your number two, that if Joe Flacco goes down first play of the game, Lamar Jackson has to come in and take over the reins. He's not ready for that.
No, but in the depth charts, he is second.
Depth chart, Smith chart, doesn't matter. That stuff, it'll all work itself out come, you know.
Yeah.
Now, they will probably dress Joe and Lamar on game days, and that's why you're seeing him number two on the depth chart, because when Joe's healthy, they're going to have a Lamar Jackson package.
Right.
We talked about that before. So they're not going to have RG3 on the active 46-man. He'll be on the 53-man, but he won't be on the game day active. He won't be activated until, let's say that scenario goes down. Joe Flacco goes down week one. Lamar comes in. He's got to finish that week one game out. Week two, RG3 is active, and RG3 is now the starting quarterback, and Lamar Jackson goes back to being number two. That's how I see it playing out. I'm not getting off of that. I think the Ravens would be making a terrible mistake in not carrying three quarterbacks this year, more so for the insurance purposes.
Honestly, that scares me. And here's why. Flacco goes down. Do you really want Lamar on that field?
Well, you have to. No,
hear me out. We just saw last night him risk his season, potentially his career, in a preseason game. I know he's, quote-unquote, fighting for roster spot, and he wants to, but you got to be smart. And I think when it comes to it, I don't know that he's going to be able to. I don't know that he's going to be able to do it. I don't trust that he's going to be able to, in that situation, step up and do the right thing and not put himself in danger. Because then he goes down. What do you do? If RG3 is not suited, we're going to put Cook out there?
You can't dress three quarterbacks. You can't. It handicaps your team somewhere else. whether it be wide receiver, whether it be special teams, whether it be, you know, corner, wherever, you're leaving yourself way too thin if you're dressing three quarterbacks. The odds, the chances of you losing two quarterbacks in one game are slim. Very slim. I'm not saying it's impossible because it's happened before, but it's slim.
Right.
RG3, like I said, they're going to want to get Lamar's feet wet with some of these package type plays that we talked about and get him a little bit of NFL experience this year. So you can't suit RG3 and not suit Lamar Jackson. So they will have Lamar Jackson suited as the number two on game day. But I guarantee you, Joe Flacco goes down. Like I said, Lamar finishes that game out. And then the very next game, RG3 is your starter.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. It just scares me that in one game, because of how Lamar plays, that it's such high risk.
Right.
So, I mean, I get it. I do. I just don't know that it's the right move long term, because, I mean, you could potentially, with the way he plays, unless somebody gets in his ear. If somebody's going to get in his ear, then fine.
Right.
But it doesn't look like somebody's getting in his ear, and maybe there's a wake up call coming from somebody, or, you know, that already has happened from somebody after last night. But if a wake-up call doesn't happen, it just scares me even more, because that is the situation which is going to cause two QBs to go down in the same game. You know, then you are really handcuffing yourself, and God forbid it's a game against the Steelers or something.
Right. Well, speaking of wake-up calls, one guy last night that I was actually pretty impressed with, Kenneth Dixon. This is a guy that I've been hard on, and I'm going to continue to be hard on, because until he gets out there and proves that he can play a 16-game season, until he can get out there and prove that he can get himself back into good football shape, I'm still going to be hard and I'm still going to ride this guy. But he stepped up. He played good last night, made some good runs. I was pretty happy with Kenneth Dixon.
Yeah, no, I was. There was a few runs that the easiest way to describe it is there was a few runs that he ran it up the gut, and he had that strong power back look on the run.
Right.
And he was able to just draw. And it was like, where was this before?
Well, he hadn't been able to be on the football field. That's where it's been. He's been on the sidelines.
But even in practices and stuff, you never heard that about him. You never really saw the I'll call it Jerome Bettis, because that's what it similar type running style that reminded me of. He's a smaller frame than Jerome Bettis, so
I'm not saying that.
But for his size, he had a lot of power. He was trying to power through and not make as many cuts like an Alex Collins does.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a downhill type runner with the ability to make some people miss. You know, he does have good shiftiness. We talked about that before with him. And, you know, coming out of college, I was very high on Kenneth Dixon. And granted, he went to a smaller school, played against crap competition, but he put up huge numbers. And everything that we saw at the combine, take that for what it's worth, looked good about Kenneth Dixon. But again, you got to stay on the football field to prove your worth in the NFL. And he hasn't been able to do that yet. But yesterday was a step in the right direction with Dixon. I liked what I saw. Far as the rest of the running back depth, wasn't too impressed with Edwards, wasn't too impressed with Thompson. I really don't think these guys make the roster. If they do, they make it in a practice squad capacity. We talked about that.
Yeah.
So overall, again, pretty happy with Kenneth Dixon, but that's about as far as I draw the line. So I think our three running backs, we've pretty much solidified with Collins, Buck Allen, and Kenneth Dixon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, from young to old, I don't even know after play last night, I don't even know that I can, you know, say he's old. He's not that old, but T Sizzle.
Yeah.
15 years in the league.
16, I think, now, right?
I think he's got 15 full seasons. I think this will be his 16th right? season.
Yeah, okay.
He had a sack on Luck last night, and he led. When I say he led the defense, I'm not saying he led the defense in tackles or anything like that, but he led that D line. He showed him, let's go get Tim Williams had a sack, Bowser had a sack, he had a sack, and four sacks total for the defense, and he was the powerhouse behind it.
Yeah, I've been really happy so far in the preseason with the pass rush as a whole for this team. I think I've got really high expectations for Bowser, you know, being a second round pick last year, didn't really do a whole lot to get on the football field last year. He was kind of a raw talent, hadn't really been playing football all that long. Right. But man, I mean, the guy is just, I mean, he's a beast. He all the measurables he has. And you could see last night, you know, the athletic ability and his ability to his burst off the line to get around the tackles. Sizzle, I think part of that sack had to do with Luck holding on to the ball too long. You know, this is the first game Andrew Luck's played in almost 2 years.
Yeah, but he turned the corner on that pretty well.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything away from Terrell Suggs at all. Terrell Suggs on that sack for a 16-year vet and as old as he is, still has some get up in those shoes. So I mean, he's still, you know, producing at a high level, and it just goes to show how mature he's gotten and through his career, how smart he's got about taking care of his taking care of his body and being in good physical shape. I'm excited about what I've seen so far in the pass rush.
Yeah, everything across the board. Like I said, you know, Williams even jumping in on it. You know, we were talking about it last week with, you know, with his frame and how he got a sack.
Yeah,
look good.
Now, one guy I really wasn't that impressed with, and I'm going to bring this up and get your opinion on it. So, CJ Mosley, we all kind of know where he lacks in ability, and that's always been in pass coverage. He's always kind of lacked in the ability to cover the tight ends, and that showed again last night. Andrew Luck abused Mosley over the middle with Doyle. On quite a few occasions. Problem is, CJ Mosley's coming up on his contract. The Ravens and him have kind of been going back and forth. And if you listen to any of the experts out there, experts are saying he's going to get top five money at his position. Yeah. Maybe even top three money at his position. Is CJ Mosley worth that kind of money in a salary cap era when he has a huge question mark like that in pass coverage?
After what I saw last night, my answer is no.
Yeah.
The easiest way to describe the way that I felt his play last night looked, he looked lost when Luck was going over the middle.
Yeah.
He looked lost. I mean, he was sitting back so far and allowing these tight ends so much space and couldn't keep up with them. You can't have that at his position. You got to have somebody that's able to cover. I mean, especially if you're going to be playing zone.
Right.
You can't. You have to know that your linebacker is going to cover him,
right,
and be able to get to him. And he just wasn't able to do that. He looked lost. He was not a step, but steps behind Doyle.
Yeah,
all night.
And one guy that did look pretty impressive, the rookie linebacker Kenny Young, at least again in pass cover situations, which is why the Ravens drafted this guy, was his ability to cover in the pass. Looked good. I just, with CJ, as much as I love him, as much as I'd like to see him stay here, I just think that contract, if he's really going to get top three or top five money, is going to handicap this team too much. And his lack of ability to be able to cover just leaves too much to desire. And I think that you can allocate that money better elsewhere throughout the team, through multiple positions, and find a replacement for CJ Mosley that can do a little of everything.
You have to allocate it better.
Right.
You have to. If the guy can't cover, the guy can't cover. And last night was a prime example. And Jack Doyle isn't even a top tight end.
Yeah, I mean, you got Andrew Luck coming out there who hadn't played in damn near 2 years. Abusing CJ Mosley.
How are you even going to think about him handling a guy like Gronk and Brady?
Gronk and even in our own division, Njoku out in Cleveland,
yeah,
severely underrated tight end. This guy's he's a physical specimen. He's got all the ability in the world. Questionable hands here and there, but CJ Mosley's never going to be able to cover that guy.
No.
Ever. Got, you know, Eifert in Cincinnati, yeah, who's a damn good tight end himself. I just, like I said, as much as I like CJ Mosley, I feel like they should allocate that money elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
On some bad news with the Ravens last night. Guy that was taken off to the sideline and saw his knee wrapped up was a guy that we had talked about last week that could totally change the look of this offensive line if they lost him, Ronnie Stanley. Reports are it's a knee strain. That's just kind of been the early talk about the injury.
Right.
Ravens have been pretty hush-hush, don't seem to know a whole lot yet about it. At this point, I don't care how minimal or how severe it is, I don't want to see him back out on the field for another preseason snap.
No. You cannot risk a long-term injury with him.
You can't. This entire offensive line changes completely without him. We talked about it. The depth on this offensive line is definitely a big question mark. I'm liking how the starting offensive line shapes up, but you're that one player like a Ronnie Stanley away from a serious injury and really changing the outlook of this team.
Yeah, no, you can't. We've seen what happens when somebody goes down.
Right.
We've seen it. You can't have two guys go down because then this line's done.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the offensive line, another guy that has been getting a ton of time and has been getting a ton of look is rookie Orlando Brown. Has looked really good, looked good yesterday as well. But here's the thing I'm starting to worry about with Orlando Brown. You got to remember, this guy is a rookie, right? College football, you play 11 or 12 games a year. This is a 5-game preseason, which he's already played 80% of the first 3 games of the preseason. Getting ready to come into a 16-game NFL regular season, even before you get to the playoffs, there's always that conversation of, you know, when do rookies hit that rookie wall? Because their bodies just aren't used to playing that long in that many games.
Right.
That's one thing. If this guy is really going to be your starting right tackle week one, how long can he play at this kind of a level, especially being somebody his size? Now, granted, everything that I've heard about him, he's actually picked up weight in training camp. He came in, I want to say, at like 348, and I think he's at 354 now. But they said his body fat has dropped significantly. So he's turning, you know, this weight into solid, good, muscle. Useful yeah. muscle. But again, you know, a guy that's body is only used to an 11 or 12 game season. You're already played basically 3 full games almost, and you're getting ready to start a 16 game NFL season. I worry about that.
You have to worry about it.
Yeah.
You have to. You can't have him. Imagine if he doesn't have a long-term career, if he's not staying healthy, if you aren't. That's why you worry about the strength and conditioning side of things for not just, you know, the guys like Jimmy Smith,
right,
but guys like him. Because if you get guys like Yanda who went down, you have Stanley who's injured, you have him go down, what are you going to do?
Right.
You at that point, you might as well put in RG3 and Lamar because you know at least they can get away. Kind of.
Yeah, it's true. That is true.
That's kind of all that you can do.
Right.
So I think we do have to address the quick comments of Jalen Ramsey regarding Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I don't even want to give it the time. He's just another showboat motor mouth that is biting off more than he can chew. Look, Jalen Ramsey's a great corner, and he was a guy that I was hoping the Ravens were going to go after a few years ago in the draft.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Like, it's the NFL. It's a violent sport.
You're going to get hit.
Somebody is going to come after you. And, I mean, I'm not like saying he can't. I'm not saying he can't handle his own. Because, I mean, he went down a laundry list of players. It wasn't just Joe Flacco. No. Joe Flacco obviously made the news here. But he went down.
Jalen just better not wear a chain. That's all I'm saying.
that's Tlaib. Tlaib will rip it off.
Yeah.
So I don't even want to give that guy the time of day. I just think that, yeah, the comments he made just goes to show his maturity level.
Yeah, the immaturity. I mean, the team needs to handle it. They need to handle it. It's just simple as that.
Absolutely. Well, it's time for a social media shout out.
Shout out. Shout out. Shout out.
We see you guys. Sherry, appreciate you tuning in as always. Appreciate all the shares. Ryan, see you watching. Appreciate you being here. It's the first time I've seen you on. James, I'm sure you're out there. I haven't seen you comment yet, but you're always there. Tammy, I saw you chime in for a minute. Good to see you. Nikki, hi. I'll wave back to you. You waved in. Jamie, I saw you as well. Trish, how you doing? We see you out there. Anybody that I missed on your end?
On my end, I got Mike. Said Mike was in for a little bit. Jason, we have my wife Carrie. Hi, Martin.
Hi,
Brian, Eric, and I don't know if you said it. Did you say Sherry?
I did.
Okay,
of course.
I didn't hear you say it. Yeah, of course. She's always in there.
Anything interesting going on YouTube?
No, just a few comments here and there from DB. Just kind of commenting on some of the stuff that we're talking about. So nothing. Nothing really that we didn't cover too much, though.
So. All right. Sounds good. Let's move on. We spent a lot of time with the Ravens.
I forgot George is watching, too. He said,
George, what's going on, man?
His name is George Foreman, by the way.
George Foreman. I love it. Appreciate you tuning in. So let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk Orioles.
Do we have to?
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. They just made Major League Baseball history in a bad way. Not in a good way. That's right. The Orioles. Yesterday solidified that they are now the fastest team in Major League Baseball history to be eliminated from playoff contention.
I've got somebody that has something to say about this.
Not too high. Too hard. Right?
First, it was really high.
Who gives a shit? It's gone.
That's right. It's Who gone. Gives a shit? It's gone. The season is gone. In Buck's words, it's over. It's over.
That's every Chris Davis for home run for the rest of the year.
It's been that kind of a year. I don't even think the Orioles get to 50 wins at this point.
No,
they'd have to play much better baseball than they played all year long to be able to get to 50 to get to 50 wins.
It's ridiculous. It's so bad. It's absolutely ridiculous.
They've won what 29% of their games. I don't even think they have a 300 winning percentage right now.
No, I don't think it is. That's what I'm trying to look it up now to see actually what their winning percentage actually is.
I think it's 296.
They're 37 and 86.
No way they win 13 games to get to 50. Yeah. No way.
It's questionable if they're even going to get to 45, to be honest, the way they're playing. The only thing that you have coming out, I got to throw him some major props in this game. Now, it wasn't the greatest game he's ever had, but Alex Cobb shut down the Indians in a complete game. Now, everybody's calling it a gem. I don't think I'd go that far. And here's why. He pitched the game. He went 9 innings. Great. He was complete game. But he gave up 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts.
I think he had a complete game it was a perfect game through 3 or 4 in that game. So albeit, yeah, it wasn't blow by you stuff, but here's the thing. He's pitched a lot better in his last 6 or 7 starts.
Oh,
I mean, he's been the guy that we signed.
He's the guy we wanted.
He's the guy that we wanted for these last 6 or 7 starts, whether that's him playing a little bit motivated, wanting to hopefully maybe get a trade somewhere else, to be in contention. So still at 4-15, he's just looking at that number. He's not going anywhere. I do hope, though, he can finish the year off strong because we do have him under contract for the next couple of years that maybe in the off season, especially if he finishes the rest of this year like he's pitching right now, that maybe he does become appealing trade bait because then he's got a couple years of control through somebody else. Yeah, it's a decent contract.
Yeah.
But Alex Cobb is, a very good pitcher minus what he's done the first 3 quarters of this season.
Right. And people are going to disagree with me. I still say it has something to do with the late start.
I mean, I think that had a lot to do with, I would say, maybe his first 5 to 10 starts, but then beyond that, he's out of that spring training mode. I was right there with you in the first 5 to 10 starts, but I think that this team just got off to such a historically bad start.
It's a cancer in the clubhouse.
It is. It spreads. Like when you're not playing good and you're not winning and you're dealing with the frustrations of individual play and team play, It does. It can tend to spread unless you've got that veteran leadership in the clubhouse that can kind of help alleviate that. And as much as I love Adam Jones, you know, I don't know if Adam Jones himself could have done that, because there really wasn't too many other leaders in this clubhouse this year.
No, there wasn't. And you bring up Jones. Interesting news that we got, you know, he went on bereavement. He had somebody pass away in the family.
Yeah.
So he was on bereavement. He didn't go with the team to Cleveland. And while that's happening, he gets put on the waiver wire and clears. Here's my argument about this whole thing. The man cleared waiver wires. What does that tell you other teams feel about him?
Yeah.
It's when you're being as vocal as you are, and it's nothing against Adam. It's his complete right. I do disagree with how he's approached it on some things. I do disagree with, you know, what I feel is his reasoning, but he has every right. He's a professional. He's an individual. He's a man in the sport of baseball. But at the same time, it tells me something about the market when somebody doesn't claim a guy like Adam Jones off waivers. Now, yes, they have to be willing to trade with the team in order to get him off waivers.
Exactly.
But he's not that critical of a piece to people, which then leads into the offseason. Where do we even see Adam landing? Because the Orioles have said, and by them putting him on waivers, I think that makes it even more clear, they don't want him here next year. He's not going to sign here next year.
I don't think he'll have a problem finding a job next year, especially if he's over this whole mental hurdle of I'm a center fielder and now center fielder only. He's obviously taken on the mentor role with Cedric Mullins coming up and kind of admitted to himself that, you know, hey, Father Time catches up to all of us, and maybe he is better suited at this point in his career as a right fielder, but he still believes, like we talked about, he still believes he's an everyday player. And I don't think that'll be a problem. I think somebody will give him a contract in the offseason. I don't know if he gets traded now. I mean, now he did say in that same interview that we listened to with CeCe Sabathia that, you know, it is possible that this could happen.
Right.
And he didn't seem to be against it if it was the right fit. It just didn't seem like at the time Philly was the right fit for him for whatever reason. I think that had a lot to do with the platoon situation that he mentioned.
Right.
But who knows? We'll see who comes knocking. One guy that's definitely not going to get traded now and who was hitting pretty well, Mark Trumbo, as he goes to the DL with a knee injury.
Even after an injection, they couldn't get rid of it.
Yeah, another guy that, you know, even if you could have gotten a bag of balls for him, you know, something. I would have liked to seen him go to get something.
And he's been doing well, minus the injuries.
Right.
He's been doing pretty well. I mean, yeah, he's been hitting pretty well. So, I mean, it sucks to see him go down. But there's really, you know, there's not a lot that you can really do about it.
Right.
But I think the future is really looking up. You know, we've talked plenty about Mullins, and we're going to get him into him in a minute. But, yeah, you know, you mentioned, you and I were talking, you've been paying close attention to Austin Hayes and Yusniel Diaz.
Yeah.
And they're playing really well in the minors.
Yeah, Diaz had a couple of back-to-back games where he hit three-run home runs in those games in Bowie. Austin Hayes has kind of worked his way back from his injury. He's worked on a few things mechanically in his stance, which we've seen him driving the ball more. So he's making better contact. He's making solid contact, more so the Austin Hayes that we saw last year when he kind of worked his way through the ranks pretty quickly. So the potential of a September Hayes, Mullins, and I'll even call for him Diaz at this point. I know, you know, a lot of people think that he's still maybe another year away from making the majors. Look, you've got, like we just talked about, you may not even win 50 games this year. What the hell do you have to lose? Bring this guy up. Let him get, like we said, let him get his bumps. Let him get his bruises. Let him learn at the major league level. He's obviously proven that he can hit at the double A level. And we've seen players like Austin Hayes last year jump from double A to the majors.
Yeah.
You know, if you were in any sort of contention, or if you had an already starting right fielder or left fielder that you were going to use for your future that were blocking him, cool, stay down at double A.
Right, exactly.
But if you really want to get a sample size of what your team's going to look like in the future without Adam, why not look at him in September?
Yeah, I mean, you could have him and Davis just flip between DH.
Right.
You know, let him go on it. Flip between DH. Adam can go out there in right field every once in a while. Whatever. Let him see what's going to happen. I think you have to do that in order to see, like, to your point, in order to see what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
So now's the time to do it. I don't think you call them up before September.
Oh, no,
you
no. Can't I'm not saying that. Just I've call them
heard,
up now.
I've heard people calling for that. Yeah, and I'm like, you recognize you lose. I think it's a year. Every time you bring a guy up like that before September, you lose a year of team control.
Right.
So exactly. You can't take that risk unless you are that serious. That's why Mullins is up here. That's because they were willing to say, we will take one less team control in order to get him up here and get him, because he is our future in the outfield.
And he's proven it, man. He's hitting well at this level. He's played great. He's fit into the clubhouse good with everybody. Hit his first major league home run the other day in Cleveland, which I was excited to see. Ball that just looked like a hot shot to the gap. I told you, this guy's got good gap-to-gap power.
Yeah.
Much like Markakis had good gap-to-gap power. Much like Brian Roberts was a 50 doubles kind of guy. I can see Cedric Mullins being that. I mean, he's been a double machine since he's been here, and he had a couple of doubles in this Cleveland series.
He's got five doubles so far.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's pretty impressive.
The other thing that's he's got five walks.
Yep.
I mean, it's only been like, you know what, 10 games. He's hitting .343.
Right.
But you know, when you have a good eye and you can hit the ball in solid, does it make solid contact into the gap like that? Yeah, absolutely. It's to your point. He could be a 50 doubles guy. He could be a Markakis or a Roberts for us. And that's right. What we need. But the setup is I think he's faster than Roberts ever was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, Markakis was never the speediest guy in the world.
No, I wasn't comparing that.
But no, it's the pieces, you know, kind of what we're talking about. I think if he can continue to show the consistency, that was the thing about Roberts. Roberts could hit that. He could be a doubles machine, but he was inconsistent about it. Markakis was consistent, but never the power, you know, the power, true power, true speed guy.
Right.
So, you know, Mullins could be that kind of nice middle ground that is your true prototypical leadoff hitter.
There it is. That's what I said. Prototypical leadoff hitter, man. That's the beauty part of this guy, is he really knows. He's got a good baseball IQ. He knows how to work a count. His on-base percentage is always going to be high. And he doesn't let the game become too big. You know what I mean? You can see that he's a very calm and collected and very humbled kind of kid. Doesn't look like he puts on any kind of added pressure, that, you know, he just goes out and plays baseball.
Yeah.
And loving what I'm seeing out of the kid so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's something we are really interested to see if he can sustain it. I want to see him sustain it. I hope he does sustain it, because if he does, it's really going to show what he can do for this team in long term.
Now, one guy I know that you were looking at from a pitching standpoint at the lower levels, Keegan Aiken. He's played really, really well lately down in Bowie. What are you seeing with Aiken?
Aiken is, he's got a good solid fastball. That's the biggest thing about him. I wish I could find more video on him, to be honest, because I couldn't find a lot of video.
All right.
I want to see how his arm slot looks. That's one of the biggest things coming out with some of these guys, and why guys like Bundy got hurt, because of the arm slots.
Right.
If the arm slot's not there, it does worry me a little bit. Now, he started his 2016 career in Aberdeen with a 1.04 ERA, but he was mainly being looked at as a low-end starter. He was only going a few innings here or there.
Right.
So far this year, he's 14-6 with a 2.77 ERA.
I'm pretty sure he leads the Eastern League in ERA and wins.
Yeah, he does. He does. And he's, as far as, he's given up 13 home runs. The one thing I don't like through 130 innings is 56 walks.
Yeah, it's pretty high. But what's good, what that tells me, though, if he's only got a 2-something ERA with 56 walks, is that he can still pitch with runners on base.
Oh, absolutely. The guy gives up less than one hit per inning.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's there. His whip is only a 1.18. So it's really the walks are what's killing his whip. His whip would be under one if he doesn't have all those walks.
But it's something I want to get a hold of some video, and I want to see his arm slot, because if his arm slot continues and he can make slight adjustments to speed, that's what's going to make him successful. Yeah. That's something that some other pitchers long term with the Orioles never learned until they go elsewhere, is you have to control speed. Jim Palmer is a big believer in that. We hear him all the time on Masson. You've got to be able to control speed. You've got to be able to throw the 96, 97 mile an hour, but at the flip of a switch, be able to pull it back to 92, 93.
Right.
Because when you get a hitter off speed, I hate to tell you, 92 looks pretty well the damn same as a 97. When you're looking at it from a batter standpoint.
Right.
It's when you drop below 92, that's when you see the changes. So if you're throwing me 96, 97, and then you throw me the change up at 86, 87, you're throwing me the breaking ball at 82, 84, I can see the difference. It becomes easier to hit off you.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at any of the greats, any of the great pitchers, the change of speed is always something that has created longevity in some pitchers' careers. Greg Maddux was one of the guys that he was phenomenal at it. He could change speeds with the best of them. And his accuracy, his control was unreal as well. But his ability to ramp it up when he needed to and to back off when he needed to, just to keep batters off balance, that goes a long way. 96 mile an hour, as hard as it may be to hit, if you're seeing 96 mile an hour consistently throughout a game, you get through the second or third time through an order. Timing. These guys are major league hitters. They're going to catch up to it. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's definitely something that, if he's working on that and we're seeing changes of speed, and that's what, you know, is creating success for him, that's going to play well, even at the major league level.
Yeah, no, it's got to play well. He has to be able to show that speed adjustment. And like I said, the arm slot is another big thing. You know, I think it's something that is not very well talked about a whole lot in baseball, but you've got to keep the arm slot in a comfortable position. I actually was talking to somebody at the game. He actually worked in sports therapy. And him and I were talking about arm slot with some of these guys. And one of the things that he said that they see out of some of these young kids is these elbow and shoulder issues, because they're throwing the ball more so at their head level instead of being up over top of their
straight
head.
Over top,
right. And if you're up over top, you have more rotation, you have more pull, but you also can't drop that arm so far down like Ubaldo does or did, and have that whip action.
Right.
Because that can wind up pulling your elbow out of joint.
Oh, you're throwing
like
all the torque on the elbow. That's
exactly.
That's what
but
most
it's,
of it is.
You know, him and I talking, I said, you know, it's one of those things you have to be able to, you do have to have torque. A good pitcher, you know, that hits high speeds like Bundy prior to the injury with Bundy, mm-hmm. when you watched him pitch, he was a rear back and his arm didn't go far back, but he was a let it slide, let my arm throw it through.
That, and he got a lot of power from his lower half. His lower half,
that's what I'm
his
saying.
Ability
you gotta,
to carry him through the zone.
Yeah, you've got to be able to use your hips, really, and yeah. that mid part of your body to really twist and turn, but also your legs. You've got to have that strong power push off to be able to get it in there. You know, I
totally agree.
Just to throw a name out there, of if you've ever seen, video of Goose Gossage pitch?
Yeah.
The man could just rear back.
You know? Yeah. He put every ounce of his body into his pitches. Yeah. Every ounce of his body.
And that's where, you know, that's why people they don't want it. Chris brings up a good point on Facebook. He says deception is a big one. Hide the ball as long as possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you can pick the ball up out of a pitcher early, I mean, every 100th of a second that you can see a ball, especially for a major league hitter, makes all the difference in the world. And that was something that, like, some of the Japanese pitchers that came up, like the Hideki, what was his name? Nomo. Remember him? Hideo Nomo. Yeah. I couldn't think of his name. Hideo Nomo from back in the day. As crazy as his delivery was, part of what really made him successful was the deception and his ability to hide the ball. You didn't see it until it was coming out of his hand.
Oh, yeah, no.
His
body was turned, and then the ball was coming from the side.
Now, Nomo was a little bit of exaggeration as far as to the mechanics and everything goes. But, yeah, to your point, Chris, great point. The longer that you can hide the ball and the more that you can keep it out of a batter's eye, the more successful you're going to be.
I got to call him out too, by the way, because his nickname is Chris Davis, because he looks like Davis.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he is. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, so, how you know Copeland?
I play softball with him.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. Yeah, him and I went to school together for a long time. So good to see you, Chris. First time I've seen you in the room, so I appreciate you checking out the podcast.
Yeah, man.
So, all right, man.
Is that time?
That time.
And now, it's time for the 2-minute warning.
All right, Fred, it is that time. Please don't tell me you have any morbidity this week.
Not morbidity. Maybe a little bit of a sad note, but not morbidity. We're all right.
All right,
no, Fred. No death.
All right, Fred. It's your turn for the 2-minute warning, and your time starts right meow.
The Washington Redskins lost rookie running back Darius Geis to an ACL injury last week, and in replacement of the injured running back, they've signed former Minnesota Viking Adrian Peterson to help carry the load. How much does he really have left in the tank now at 33 years old? Guess we'll see. Know. Last week, Broncos GM John Elway talked with the media, and when asked about Colin Kaepernick, mentioned that he had his chance in Denver, and he chose to nix that deal. Well, those comments have Kaepernick's attorney up in arms and claiming Elway violated a gag order that was issued to Elway and a few others who were deposed in Kaepernick's grievance against the NFL that they colluded to keep him unemployed because of his social justice protest. This could get real ugly for Elway pretty quickly if he doesn't learn to keep his mouth shut. We'll see. Speaking of clearing waivers, Andrew McCutchen has reportedly been placed on waivers and could mean a trade is coming. The 31-year-old's hitting .257 on the year and is set to be a free agent after this season. With the Giants in a bit of a tailspin and falling further and further out of contention, they could look to get a small return on their investment in McCutchen. Makes a lot of sense to me and would like to see the O's do the same thing with Jonesy. We'll see.
Yeah.
Dodgers closer Kenley Jansen has been spending the last 11 days dealing with an issue of an irregular heartbeat. But Jensen seems to have a mindset that if it goes, it goes, as he returned to the team for yesterday's game against the Cardinals, has ended up giving up 2 home runs in his return. Is it really worth all that? Is it worth the risk? It's pretty scary stuff when it comes to your heart.
Yeah, you don't mess around with that.
It's pretty amazing what's going on in Oakland right now with the Athletics. In the land of misfit former Cubs players, the Athletics are putting on a charge for the playoffs. Former Cubs castaways Edwin Jackson, Trevor Cahill, Brett Anderson, and even Fernando Rodney have all contributed in a positive way for this season for the A's. I'm kind of pulling for them at this point as a team. What else do I have
Billy
to
Bean
cheer
doing
for?
His work.
What else do I have to cheer for? Man.
Billy Bean doing his work out there.
Yeah. I kind of overloaded myself with 2-minute warning this week. I had one topic, and I want to bring this up just because I thought it was pretty cool. So if you haven't seen the interview yet, Cleveland Cavaliers forward Kevin Love sat down with ESPN's Jackie McMullen for her first part in a 5-part series on mental health in the NBA. Kevin gets into his battles with anxiety and his first a panic attack that he had on the court that ultimately led to him being labeled soft by most fans out there. And I think a lot of that has to do with just people not being aware of how severe anxiety and panic and depression and that whole disorder really can be. I mean, it's an epidemic. 1 in 5 people nowadays deal with issues from depression and anxiety. And you're starting to see other players in the NBA come out and talk about their struggles. Paul Pierce has come out. You know, he was stabbed 11 times years back and has had issues with his, you know, depression and anxiety since then. DeMar DeRozan, another guy, he's been recently talking about his battles with it. I know he, you know, grew up in Compton and had a rough upbringing, you know, as a young African-American growing up in Compton, you had to look a certain way, dress a certain way, act a certain way. And even if you weren't that way, you had to do those things or, you know, you were the outcast or you right. were, you know, you were going to get picked on or you were going to get beat up. And he's had a lot of mental hurdles, you know, through his life dealing with that. It's good to see some of these bigger than life athletes come out and really open up a little bit and talk about the epidemic that is mental health, because it affects everybody.
Yeah, no, everybody, it can happen to anybody, anytime. So, you know, and it's not just an NBA, you know, we recently had Steve Smith, the Ravens come out and say that, you know, he had some issues with depression and fighting and stuff like that. So, you know, these guys go through a lot, and it's not just after things, after their seasons are over, their careers are over, but it's definitely during as well. So
absolutely.
So I think we got to touch on what we did do this weekend. Since you wanted to sit here and call me out before the show started.
Well, first of all, Scott, so for those out there, we had our Birdland BS Fantasy Football League draft over the weekend, which shout out to everybody that's participating in this league. Everybody was great about this. Everybody showed up, most of them on time. Redhead. Ryan, yes, I'm calling you out. You did not show up on time.
Well, wasn't he hunting?
Yeah, he was getting a hunting license or something. I didn't even know redhead shot animals. but yeah, so we had our fantasy football league draft. Some questionable picks across the board, even with pick number one. God bless you, Jess. I love you. The Buffalo chicken dip was amazing. But Aaron Rodgers, number one, had me scratching my head. And
hey, you know what? If she comes out on top this year,
hey, look, I'll bow down to her. No doubt. I'll bow down to her. She comes out number one. Look, Aaron Rodgers, absolutely the best quarterback to take in draft. Think you could have waited a couple more rounds to get him. But nonetheless, you saw your man. You went out and got him. The one other question mark you had, Jess, Rashad Perryman? Really? Like,
so homie got it. He has the year of his career.
I saw her put up B. Perryman on the draft board, and I thought, is there another B. Perryman that I don't know? Is there a Barkley Perryman? Is there a Bernard Perryman? Like, that can't be Rashad Perryman. She did not put up Rashad Perryman. But again, he comes out, he has a breakout year, puts up 1,000 yards receiving and 10 touchdowns. I will bow down to you because you knew something that nobody knew or could see.
Give me that lottery ticket you got, Jess.
Yeah, right, exactly. But Scott, I got to call you out.
This isn't even a call out at this point. Like, come on.
We're a Birdland BS podcast. We are a Baltimore sports podcast. How did your team end up with half Redskins and half Steeler players or defenses or whatever?
Don't give me this half. I took two Steelers. I took the Steelers defense and Ben Roethlisberger because he was the best available quarterback at the time, and he's proven. And the defense was the best available defense at the time. That was proven.
Oh, man.
Kareem Hunt, what do you want me to do? Best available option at the time.
Good Lord.
Who else was the other guy I took? I can't even remember.
Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt's a Kansas City Chief.
Not Kareem Hunt. Sorry. Who the heck did I take?
I don't even remember, but all I could remember seeing was Steelers, Redskins. I didn't see any purple on that team. That's for damn sure.
Oh, I took Alex Smith and Jameson Crowder. What did you, like...
Oh,
leave
man.
Me alone. And the Steelers defense, by the way, was my like 11th round pick. I didn't take defense in like the 8th, 9th round like some people did.
Look, I'm right there with you. I'm just giving you shit. Somehow
I knew this was coming and I was prepared for it.
Somehow with the 6th overall pick, Ezekiel Elliott slipped down to me at number 6 and it's number 6 and I couldn't pick him, but I was dead set at number 6, if the draft had gone anything in the beginning, first 5 picks like I thought it would, I was dead set at number 6 to pick Antonio Brown. So we'd have been having this conversation the other way around because I would have had a Steeler with the very first overall pick. I'm just giving you a bunch of crap. You guys out there in Birdland BS Nation, give him a bunch of crap. He's got half of a team with Redskins and Steelers. No Ravens players.
And I've got two guys from Philly too, by the way.
But I had a lot of fun with all of you guys out there that showed up for the draft. It was a good time. So looking forward to the season. Got the everybody got a chance to see the Birdland BS belt, which, again, Undisputed Belts did their thing with that. It really came out nice. Excited to give that away to myself because I'm going to win this whole thing. We'll see how that goes. It always looks good on paper when you first draft. You're always excited about your roster, but
we'll see what happens when your defense goes up against Ben Roethlisberger. How about that?
Oh man. But another announcement that I want to make. So We for those out there that that listen to Oriole podcast, and really a podcast that helped me get a jump start on the Birdland BS podcast, Section 336, specifically Josh Soroka, the host of Section 336.
As I think they called him the button pusher.
He is. He's kind of the producer. He's the behind the scenes guy, but yet he contributes in a huge way to the show.
As my wife would call him, he's the techie guy.
Right. He has been huge in our development with this program and our success in a lot of ways, because he's been an open book when I've asked him questions on certain things, because I basically started this thing from the ground up, not knowing anything about a podcast, not knowing anything about how to do anything. And he's been huge with helping us with that. And recently, him and I have been talking, and we're actually going to be partnering together a little bit, in the sense that he has put up a new website called birdlandsports.com. That's birdlandsports.com. And basically what he's doing is he's using that website to kind of showcase what he feels and what we feel are some of the better podcasts and some of the better bloggers in the area. You know, guys like us and girls like us that are trying to just make a name for themselves and to get content out there. And so if you haven't listened to the audio podcast before, if you're new to the Birdland BS and you've only been listening to the live streams on YouTube and Facebook, be sure to check us out on our website at birdlandbs.com, but also check us out on birdlandsports.com, because you'll find all kinds of content on there outside of just our show. So big shout out to Section 336 and those guys. We're looking forward to working with them in the future.
Yeah. I had to smile there because you said guys like us and girls like us. Are you identifying?
Well, I didn't want to not.
You know, I know where you're going with it. I had to give you a hard time about it. So
I didn't want to get accused of being sexist.
All right, guys.
Oh, man.
Well.
Another one in the books.
Another one in the books, man. We were
59, one away from 60. Hard to believe, man.
How close are you to that?
Shut up.
Closer to me. That's all that matters. All right, guys. Be sure to check us out on the web, www.birdlandbs.com. As Fred said, you can also check out some of the articles on www.birdlandsports.com. Follow us on all of our social network sites, Twitter, at Fred Birdland BS, at Scott Birdland BS, and at Birdland BS. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, check us all out. If you want to listen to the audio podcast while you're driving home from work, going to the gym, whatever you're doing, find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, TuneIn, Stitcher, you name it.
We're Spotify. There. Check us out on Spotify. Make sure you follow us on there. That's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Be sure to look us up and subscribe on all of those. As always, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next Tuesday night, 8:45. You know the time. You know the place. Birdland Studio. For Birdland BS, I'm Scott.
I'm Fred.
See you guys.
We'll see you.